The Jennifer Morgue, Disc 11.
Epilogue. Freeze Company. It's August in England, and I'm almost functioning on British summertime again. We're having another heat wave, but up here on the Norfolk coast it's not so bad. There's an onshore breeze coming in from the Wash, and while it isn't exactly cold, it feels that way after the Caribbean. We call this place the Village. It's an old in-joke. Once upon a time it was a hamlet, a village in all respects, save its lack of a parish church. It was one of three churchless hamlets that had clustered in this area, and the last of them still standing, for the others slid under the waves a long time ago. There was only the one meandering road in the vicinity, and it was potholed and poorly maintained. Go back 60 or 70 years, and you'd find it was home to a small community of winkle pickers and fishermen who braved the sea in small boats. They were a curious, pale, inbred lot, not well liked by the neighbours up and down the coast, and they kept to themselves. Some of them, it said, kept to themselves so efficiently that they never left the company of their own kind from birth unto death. But then the Second World War intervened, and someone remembered the peculiar paper the village doctor had tried to publish in the Lancet back in the '20s, and someone else noticed its proximity to several interesting underwater obstructions, and, with the stroke of a pen, the War Ministry relocated everyone who lived next to the waterline. And the men from MI6 Department 66 came and installed electricity and telephones and concrete coastal defense bunkers, and they rerouted the road so that it doubled back on itself and missed the village completely, before merging with the road to the next hamlet up the coast. And they systematically erased the village from the Ordnance Survey's public maps, and from the post office, and from the discourse of national life. In a very real sense, the village is as far away from England as St. Martin, or the moon, but in another sense it's still too close for comfort. Today, the village has the patina of neglect, common to building developments that subsist on the largesse of government agencies and rely for their maintenance on duct tape and the extensive use of the power of Crown immunity to avoid planning requirements. It's not a white-painted, picturesque Italianate paradise like Port Marion, and we inmates aren't issued numbers instead of names, but there's a certain resemblance to that other village. And there is, overlooking the harbour mole, a row of buildings that includes an old-fashioned pub with paint peeling from the wooden decking outside, worn linoleum floors, and hand pumps that dispense a passable, if somewhat briny, brew. I came up from London yesterday, after the Board of Inquiry met to hear the report on the outcome of the Jennifer Morgue business. It's over now, buried deep in the secret files in the laundry stacks below Mornington Crescent Tube Station. If you've got a high enough clearance, you can get to read them. Just go ask the librarians for Case Broccoli Goldeneye. Who says the classification office doesn't have a sick sense of humour? I'm still feeling burned by the whole affair. Bruised and used about sums it up, and I'm not ready to face Mo yet, so I had to find somewhere to hole up and lick my wounds. The village isn't a resort, but there's a three-story modern building called the Monkfish Motel, that's not entirely unlike a bad 60s moat house. I think it was originally built as MOD married quarters, and there's the dog and whistle to drink in. And if I get drunk and start babbling about beautiful man-eating mermaids and sunken undersea horrors, nobody's going to bat an eyelid. It's late afternoon, and I'm on my second pint, slumped in the grasp of the sofa in the east corner of the lounge bar, and I'm the only customer at this time of day. Most everyone else is off attending training courses or working, but the bar stays open all the same. The door opens. I'm busy failing to reread a dog-eared paperback biography, my mind skittering off the words as if they're polished ice cubes that melt and slide away whenever I warm them with my glance. Right now, it's gathering moss on the coffee table in front of me as I idly flip the antique Zippo lighter that's the one part of my disguise kit I ended up bringing home. Footsteps slowly approach, clattering on the bare floor. I sit there in the corner, and I wonder tiredly if I ought to run away. And then, it's too late.
"He told me I'd find you here," she says.
"Really?" I put the Zippo down and look up at her.